Let the record show that I'm supposed to quit in 17 minutes. It takes me 17 minutes to eat breakfast. What are you talking about? Hey, if you have your Bibles, go to Exodus 2. Thank you for letting me be here. I am strengthening some older friendships and making some new ones, and am really enjoying looking forward to studying and being with you. Never assume biblical literacy on the part of your audience. So let's make sure that we know some stuff, okay? If I talk about a Hebrew, an Israelite, the 12 tribes of Israel, or Judah, am I talking about the same group of people? Okay, in Alabama, this means yes. This means no. This means you're not voting. Okay, Abram gets called by God from the Ur of the Chaldees, and God says, I'm going to send you to a place. Every place your foot touches, I'll give to your kids. At some point, everybody in the world is going to be blessed because of one of your kids. That's a prophecy about the Messiah. Okay? So Abram leaves the Ur of the Chaldees. Abraham, his name is changed to father of many nations, has a son named Isaac. Isaac has two sons, or actually several sons, but he has Jacob and Esau. Jacob becomes the heir of the blessing through some shenanigans, and God changes his name to Israel. So his children are known as the children of? Thank you very much. Okay? So the 12 tribes of Israel. Can anybody name any of the tribes of Israel? Benjamin, Judah, Levi, Reuben, Gad, Asher, Naphtali, Dan, Simeon, Issachar, Zebulun, Benjamin, Manasseh. Okay, so we got those guys. Okay, so if you're one of the sons of one of the sons, are you an Israelite? Are you a Hebrew? Okay, so what happens is during the time of their sojourn in the land of Canaan, one of Jacob's children, one of Israel's children, gets sold into slavery, and he ends up in Egypt during a famine. His name is Joseph. During that famine, his brothers come to Egypt to buy food. They reconnect. They solve some old family wounds. I don't have enough time to tell you my take on that story. But what happens is, he says, why don't you guys just move here? There's plenty of food. We got 7 more years of famine. If you guys don't live here, everybody's going to starve to death. And so 70 people, if you read the Septuagint, it's 75. The difference in those numbers is because of a couple of grandkids and a dude who died in the desert. But the numbers are accurate just depending on which record you're looking at. So if you read 70 in one text and 75 in another, don't panic. It's not a contradiction. 70 or 75, depending on Septuagint or the old manuscript, move into Egypt. While they're there, they start farming. They start raising sheep. They start doing the things that they do. And at this time, the Pharaoh who lives in Egypt, the guy who's in charge, is pretty comfortable with that. Several generations pass, and a new Pharaoh comes to town. And everybody's really confused about who that guy might be. There's several different theories. One of the theories is that there's some people who live around Egypt known as the Shepherd Kings. And the Shepherd Kings and the Egyptians did not always get along. You'll notice in the very early parts of Joseph's story, he tells his family, be very careful not to tell these guys that you're shepherds. I'll tell you when to tell them you're shepherds. But the things that shepherds do are detestable to the Egyptians. And it's probably because of some of the Shepherd King stuff, because the Shepherd Kings were a nomadic bunch. And if you get a bunch of different groups, but if they ever organize and come together, you have a problem. And so it could be that there's some warring with the Shepherd Kings. This Pharaoh comes to office, and he looks out and he goes, I've got 4.2 million people living in my back door who aren't Egyptians. Do you think that'd make a ruler a little nervous? I got 4.2 million people that live in my suburbs, and if there's ever a war with the Shepherd Kings, by the way, what do these guys do for a living? Well, they're shepherds. Ugh. Yeah, I hadn't fixed your rat problem. Look, somebody needs to go back here and kill that possum. It's probably some seventh grader back there swinging on stuff. Anyway, if I have a problem with the shepherd kings, and I've got 4.2 million people whose main livelihood is shepherding, this could be an issue. And so what he decides to do is do some population control. He says, if you have a Hebrew baby born and it's a male, put it in a river. Now, let's make sure we understand this. If a Hebrew man marries a Hebrew woman and they have a baby, it's a every single time, okay? I had to explain that to my northern friends. We're doing a team building on the ropes course for the people who moved in to do the Target Distribution Center. And there are people from all over the world. And this lady introduces herself as Debbie. I think it meant to be Debbie. And I'm from Georgia. You're not from Georgia, okay? You may live in Georgia, sweetheart, but you are not from Georgia. Oh, I'm a southerner. No, you're not a southerner. If your mother is southern and your daddy is southern, you are southern, okay? If your cat has kittens in the oven, they're kittens, not biscuits. You understand that? Okay? I mean, that's just the way it works here. So just because you live somewhere don't make you from there, okay? So if a Hebrew marries a Hebrew and they have a baby, it's a every single time. So what happens is, Exodus chapter 2. Now, a man from the house of Levi, is that one of the children of Israel? Went and took as his wife a daughter of Levi. Hey, these folks are from the same tribe. And the woman conceived and bore a son. And when she saw that he was beautiful, she hid him 3 months. So a guy from the tribe of Levi marries a lady from the tribe of Levi. They have a kid, and he's a Levite or Hebrew. Thank you very much, Captain Obvious. Okay, so we got this guy, and he's a Hebrew. They do what they tell them to do. They put the baby in the river. But they put him in an ark. Same Hebrew word for the thing Noah built. But his is little. The Pharaoh's daughter comes down to the river to bathe, and she's got these attendants around her. And while she's there, she hears the baby crying. And she finds this little basket with this little baby in it, and she draws him out of the river and names him Moshe, which means drawn out. Now, we're Southern, and we like to call him Moses. Moshe sounds a little, you know, effeminate to us, so we call him Moses, but his name was Moshe, and it means drawn out. And so she takes this little Hebrew baby back to the palace and raises him as her own son. You'll read in the book of Acts that Moses was trained in all the wisdom and learning of the Egyptians. He was powerful in both word and deed. Moses is raised in a private school education by the Egyptians. These are the dudes who built your pyramids. These are the guys who have an algebraic formula that will solve the surface area of an egg. Not a flat plane ellipse. Not the area of a circle. Not the area of a square or a polygon. But the surface area of a spheroid that's elliptical. That's some serious math. Moses could do that kind of stuff. Moses is trained and brought up in the Egyptian culture with the Egyptians, but he recognizes one day, guess what? I'm not an Egyptian. I'm a Hebrew. And all of my relations, all of my brethren are out here, and instead of them being allowed to shepherd anymore, they're making full-time brick labor for the Pharaoh. They're building bricks. And he's using them as conscripted labor in his construction projects. So, look, I'm the Pharaoh's grandson. I've got some clout. I've got some moxie. I can probably make a difference here. So he goes out at about age 40 to try to represent God, try to live for God, try to be a representative for God's people. Exodus chapter 2, verse 11. Now, it came to pass in those days when Moses was grown that he went out to his brethren. Who are his brethren? The Hebrews, and looked at their burdens. And he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his brethren. He looked this way. He looked that way. He saw no one. He killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. I'm not real impressed with Moses' conflict resolution techniques, but You know, you got to do what you're good at. So he looks this way, he looks that way. He doesn't see. By the way, when you look and you don't see, that doesn't mean there's nobody there. But he looks and he looks and he doesn't see and he kills. This is premeditation. He decides, if I can do this and not get caught, I'll do it. And he kills this guy and hides him in the sand. The next day, he went out, and behold, two Hebrew men were fighting. So day one, you got a Hebrew and an Egyptian fighting, and the Egyptian is striking this guy, and Moses just does him. Now there's two Hebrew guys fighting. And he said to the one who did the wrong, "Why are you striking your companion?" So now he's trying to be this peacemaker. He wants to be this statesman and work on this conflict stuff. And he said, "Who made you a prince and a judge over us? Do you intend to kill me as you killed the Egyptian?" And Moses feared and said, "Surely this thing is known." What he thought was a secret is not a secret. Somebody saw him do it. Now he's afraid. Now when the Pharaoh heard of this matter, he sought to kill Moses. But Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. So Moses is raised in the palace. He's the apparent grandson of the Pharaoh. He's the adopted grandson, at least, of the Pharaoh. He's got this power. He's got this ability. He's got this training. And he goes out and he sees this Egyptian beating a Hebrew, and he says, "You're not going to beat my people." Kills him. The next day he goes out and he sees two Hebrews fighting. And he says, "Hey, look, you guys don't need to be acting. Oh, who made you a prince? Who put you in charge? Who made you a ruler over us? You're going to kill me too?" And he realizes, hey, this is a bad deal. Somebody knows what's going on. So he runs away from home. He runs literally out into the desert where he's going to be leading these people several years from now. And so he's run away. Have you ever thought about running away from home? Anybody? You know what the big deterrent from running away from home is? You can't take your stuff with you. Okay? You get away from home very far and there's no refrigerator. There's no fresh water. It gets cold at night. It gets hot in the summer. So most people don't run away from home because they don't have the things to survive. Moses runs away from home, and when he gets out into the wilderness, guess what's the first thing he finds? A well. If you can find fresh water when you're running, listen, that's a touchdown. You know, he's run away from home. He's in the Egyptian desert, and he gets out here to the land of Midian, and here's a source of fresh water. Folks, if you can find fresh water, camp there. Because that's hard to come by in the wilderness. Most people, when they die because they're lost, die from exposure or lack of water. And so this guy's out here, and he finds a well, so he sits down by the well. Now the priest of Midian had seven daughters, and they came, and they drew water, and they filled their flocks. They filled the troughs to water their father's flocks. So you're a dude. You've run away from home. You're out here in the wilderness, and you go, "Oh man, there's fresh water." And you sit down by this well, and while you're sitting down by the fresh water, what comes out of the woods? Seven girls. Touchdown, Moses. Hey, this running away thing is not bad at all. This is good stuff. You know, you're just sitting out here, and all of a sudden, you know, whoop, da-da, da-da. Wow, I like this running away stuff. I need to write some of my buddies. Let's run away, you know. So now he's out here, and he's watching these girls come out of the woods, and they're herding sheep. Now, what happens with sheep is sheep are very paranoid little creatures. About everything that eats sheep. They're easy to catch. They don't fight back. They're really meals on wheels in the animal kingdom. I mean, that's just it. If you need a good snack, go find you a sheep. You can catch him. It's not a problem, okay? Sheep will not stick their head in a bucket to drink water. That's why the psalmist says, "My cup runneth over." Sheep won't drink out of a creek that's making too much noise. You lead me beside still water. So these girls have been out here babysitting sheep all day. They bring them in at the end of the day, and they have to pull water out of a well. Water weighs 8 pounds to the gallon. So they're bicep curling water out of this well. And they pour it in these low troughs. And then once there's enough water in the trough, the sheep line up, and they get to drink water out of the trough. Then they take their sheep and put them in the pen at night. What happens every single day is as soon as they get all the water in the troughs, these shepherds come out, scatter their flock, let their sheep drink. They go away, and the girls have to do this twice a day. You'll find that later in the chapter, because their dad will say, "Why are you home early today?" I mean, he's used to them coming in after dark and him going, "Shepherds again, shepherds again." every day. Now, for the parents in the audience, notice the parenting style. This guy doesn't run out here and camp out by the well and have a mean talk with those shepherds. He lets his daughters be adults and deal with a problem. You didn't cause it. You can't cure it. How do you cope with it? We need some adults in the church. We need folks who can say, you know what, it's uncomfortable, or I don't like it, or this is inconvenient, but you know what, it's my job and I need to do it. And we need a generation of people who have the ability to do that. So Moses is sitting here and he watches this drama unfold. He's sitting here, seven girls come out of the woods. This is good stuff. I like this running away thing. The girls lift the water, they put it in the troughs, and then the shepherds come. Verse 17, then the shepherds came and drove them away. And Moses stood up and helped them. Seems like the only thing Moses is good at is fighting people. So he runs these shepherds off. Moses stood up and helped them and watered their flock. Now when they came to Reuel, their father, he said, how is it that you've come so soon today? You know, he's used to them being late. They come in early. They get part of the day off. Why are you guys here early today? This is awesome. And the girls say, an Egyptian delivered us from the hand of the shepherds, and he drew water for us and watered the flock. And he said to his daughters, and where is he? Why have you left the man? Call him that he may eat bread. Hey, look, this old guy's been trying to have a son for years. He struck out seven times, okay? Finally just tapped, I'm done. No more, I'm not going to have another daughter here. And now they got a guy. You met a man? Where is he? Bring him here. We'll feed him. He got one in seven chances here, folks. Okay, he getting a son-in-law out of this. He finally has some help on this farm. And so he's trying to get, you know, and well, this is great. Bring him here, feed him supper. You know, I got. He can't have seven ugly daughters, let's just face, okay? I mean, he got to, you know, I mean, just, you know, right down the line. And the guy's by himself in the wilderness, you know, a six will look pretty good. Anyway, So he said, where is the guy? Bring him here. Did you catch what happened? Now, there's a lot of cool details here. But did you catch it? Why are you here early today? An Egyptian delivered us from the shepherds. Excuse me? Moses' father is a... Moses' mother is a... Is Moses an Egyptian? Whoa. What's up? Hey, why are you guys home early today? Well, this Egyptian rescued us. This dude's not an Egyptian. How in the world does a guy with a Hebrew mother and a Hebrew father get called an Egyptian? It could be because of his skin color. People who worked outside and made bricks were very, very tanned. People who lived in the palace and ate grapes and people stood behind them and fanned them were very pale. Very, very high priority in those days. Read the Song of Solomon after you're 35. read the Song of Solomon, and she'll say, my brothers make me work in the vineyard, and I have dark skin. My lover may not find me attractive because I'm tanned. They didn't value the olive-colored skin like we do. They didn't value a dark tan like our society does. So it could be that Moses is just sitting out here, and he hadn't been in the wilderness long enough to get a tan, and he's a pale dude, and they go, that guy's an Egyptian. He dressed like those guys live in the palace. And it could be Moses is rocking the whole palace garb thing. Hey, remember earlier the guy said, who made you a prince? You think Moses is dressed like a shepherd or Moses is dressed like a prince? You think Moses is dressed like a brick laborer or Moses is dressed like a prince? He's probably got on that stuff the Egyptians wore, rocking one of those snake hats. When he's a teenager, worked backwards. Saggy robe and a snake hat. How cool would that be? You know, I mean... And, you know, he's wearing an Abercrombie and Imhotep or whatever, you know, the latest thing out of the mall. So there's something about Moses' presentation that when people see him, they don't see a Hebrew. What do they see? An Egyptian. Who does Moses think he's representing? He thinks he's representing God. What does everybody else see? My wife's a school teacher. I'm self-employed. There's a traffic situation in Huntsville we call the idiot factor on the parkway. I don't deal with the idiot factor on the parkway. Okay? If you want to come to my office for a very early morning session, I'll meet you at 7 o'clock. I'll meet you at 9 o'clock. I will not meet you at 7 o'clock. At 8 o'clock, one of us will be late. because of the idiot factor on the parkway. So during the school year, my wife gets up. I get up with her. I cook breakfast. While the breakfast is cooking, I do my little push-ups. I do my little pull-ups, and we talk, and then she goes to work, and I'll finish my workout, and then I go into work. And that's the way thing worked, okay? In the summertime, she doesn't teach school, and I still have to work. So occasionally, I cook breakfast at Waffle House. Just saying. So I go to this little Waffle House. I'm sitting on one of those little stools at the counter, and I order a cheesesteak omelet, and I eat my omelet and drink my milk, and I realize I'm going to be late to the office, and I pop off my little stool, and I'm trying to get my ticket ready to go. Little girl walks by me. Walks by me again. Walks by me again, smiles at me. I go, pop, pop, pop. Excuse me, ma'am. I don't mean to be rude, but I got to go. And she says something, almost embarrassed herself. She said, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize. And what she started to say and caught herself was, I didn't realize you stood up. Because, see, on her Waffle House stool, I'm about that tall. And when I jump off that stool and stand up, guess what? I'm about that tall. And she's like, oh, I got, and then she realized, uh-oh, I'm in trouble. You know, I've just made a short joke on a guy that I don't know. As funny as that is, and it's funny, if you sing stand up for Jesus, and nobody can tell you stood up, then that's not funny. If you claim to be one of God's people, and I look at you, and I see an Egyptian, I'm not living for him. See, when we say I'm living for him, you've got to be able to see me and tell that difference. If I stand up beside a Waffle House stool, I'm at the same height I am when I'm sitting on the Waffle House stool. A difference that makes no difference is no difference. Now write that down. A difference that makes no difference is no difference. And if I say I'm going to school today and I'm going to live for him, and I have the same values they have, and I read the same stuff that they read, and I use the same words that they use, and I dress like they dress in the provocative, immodest, or the worldly stuff, how's anybody supposed to know I'm a Christian? When you listen to what plays on my music selection or my playlist, if you read my Facebook post, if you look at my Snapchat or my Instagram, and there's no difference there, a difference that makes no difference is no difference. And so when I start representing God, whether I'm a cheerleader or a football player or an academic All-American or a computer guy or an art guy or a music girl or whatever it is that I do, can people look at me, listen to me, watch me, and go, that's one of those God people? Or did I just see another Egyptian? Read Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11, they kind of sums up some of the hero stuff of the Old Testament. Notice what this says about Moses. Verse 24, by faith, Moses, when he became of age, and this is not when he got a certain chronological age. This is when he grew up, when he matured, when he got real. By faith, Moses, when he was of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Moses reached a certain point of his life and said, I'm not her kid. Oh, yeah, I was raised here, and I went to their school, and I learned there, but I'm not one of them. I'm a child of God. I'm one of God's chosen people. Now, before that time, he dresses like an Egyptian. He walks like an Egyptian. He talks, the Hebrews that he talks to, who made you a prince? He gets out here in the wilderness. These girls never met him before. First call, he's an Egyptian. But when he got real, when he decided to live for God, by faith, when he became a full age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing to suffer the affliction with the people of God rather to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he looked for a reward. Hey, when he made a choice about what he's going to be, and really this is not about what you do, this is about what you are. when he decided, I'm going to be one of God's people, he said, I will take suffering and I'll take reproach over everything pleasurable in that palace and all the riches that are there. He walked away from the inheritance of being the adopted grandson of Pharaoh. And he said, I'll put up being treated like a slave before I'll be put up with this, because I'm choosing something. Discipline, Carlson Gracie, the guy who invented the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, says that discipline is the ability to choose between what you want most and what you want now. And a lot of times we choose what we want now and forget what we're supposed to be about the most. When Moses grew up, he chose, made a choice. Everything you say yes to is something else you say no to. And he made a choice and said, I will suffer with these people rather than have their riches. I will suffer this reproach with those folks rather than be involved in all their pleasure. And he made a distinction between himself. By faith, he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as having seen him who is invisible. By faith, he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of the blood, lest he who destroyed the firstborn should touch them. The next time Moses left Egypt, he didn't go because he was afraid. The second time Moses left Egypt, he left because they were afraid. The second time Moses goes to Egypt at age 80, he walks in. You know what he's dressed like? A shepherd. Because he'd been keeping sheep in the wilderness for 40 years. And he walks into Pharaoh's court in his shepherd's garment with a staff and says, let God's people go. And I'm not afraid of you. And I'm not afraid of your gods. In fact, let's line your gods up. There's 10 of them. They control everything from the river to death. And he set them up like bowling pins. And 10 plagues later, he showed who was in charge of the world. He showed who was in charge of the universe. And when Moses decided to live for God, the next time he went into Egypt, he was dressed like a shepherd. And when he left Egypt, he didn't leave Egypt because he was afraid of them, but because they were afraid of him. And they were asking him, hey, please move, please go, because of that thing that happened with the Passover. So if you're going to live for Jesus, you've got to decide, what am I presenting? What am I showing? In my dress, in my actions, in my speech, in my attitude, online, offline. When people look at you, when they look at you, do they see you? Do they see the world, or do they see Jesus? A difference that makes no difference is no difference. Let's pray. Father, thank you for this opportunity to spend the day with these young people, to strengthen friendships and to make new ones. Thank you for the things that we've sung and for the things that we've read. Father, help us to grow in Christ. Help us to learn to live for him, because he died for us. Father, help us to live lifestyles that are different so that people can tell whose people we really are. Bless us the rest of this day. In Jesus' name, amen.